Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Justice Kadish presiding.
Thank you, Madam Clerk, and good morning, Council and colleagues. You guys are here for the very first time. I'm the presiding justice on the Supreme Court, so it's exciting for me, maybe not so much for you. But we're here today on case number 79555, Triangulum Partners LLC versus Galaxy Gaming, Inc. We are scheduled for 30-minute argument today, which obviously is 15 minutes to each side. I just want to be clear to avoid any confusion. You should be able to see the clock on the screen. Ms. Turner, did you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, please. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay, so just to be clear, the clock will still be running down from the full 15 minutes, but when we get to 5 minutes, there'll be a tone and the yellow light will come on to remind you that you're now into your rebuttal time, but the clock will still keep going. And then during respondents' argument, you're not reserving time for rebuttal, but at 5 minutes, you'll get a tone and the yellow light to remind you, okay, you have 5 minutes left, okay? All right, with that, yes. Counsel, are you ready to go?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead then, thanks.
Well, we're here to address an abuse of discretion grounded in pervasive and profound legal error that continues to plague the case down below. There are multiple issues, but number one, irreparable injury. The court was wrong to determine that money damages were adequate to address the unlawful cancellation of the Triangulum shares. There's a whole box of property and business interests that go along with lost value of shares that are wrongfully canceled. NRS 78.240 directs the shares are personal property of Triangulum. Triangulum had the right of possession. Limited voting and participation rights, could establish a quorum, could vote for certain matters. They were denied all of that participation. The threat doesn't go away with the cancellation if it's wrongful. We have a shareholders meeting at Galaxy set for February of 2021. And Triangulum is denied any participation,
so
not attendance.
Ms. Turner?
Yes?
Hi. So, I guess I have a couple of questions about that. One is, do you have any authority that the deprivation of shares of stock constitutes irreparable injury?
Well, irreparable injury is taking away personal property that can't be replaced. The Guayan and the Sobel cases talk about these business interests. The right to monetize the shares is one. The right to derivative rights.
Well, isn't the right to monetize shares something that, by definition, can be replaced by money?
No, it's who the right to control who it goes to and for how much. The right to, here we have something truly unique in that we had a control block, 57% of a very unique company, Galaxy, a unique amount, 57%, that could not be replaced. And that 57%, while there are derivative rights that go along with that, shareholders, including Triangulum, are due fiduciary duties and have ongoing rights under the articles and the NRS 78 that go away with the cancellation of the shares.
And Ms. Turner,
there are no ongoing derivative rights.
Pardon? So even before the redemption, or attempted redemption, I guess, depending on your point of view. Before that happened, pursuant to the Gaming Control Commission, I believe, order, he already wasn't allowed to vote at least part of the shares and didn't have majority voting control. Is that right?
So there was an agreement with the gamers that is reflected in the VDCTA that's part of the record, where there was there were certain shares locked up. 15% were locked up with custodians that were acceptable to the gaming authorities, and the rest of the shares had limitations on the vote so that the votes could not be sold without gaming approval and could not be voted to change the composition of the board. Other voting rights remained intact. That was in place at the time of the purported redemption. But, Your Honor, there are other rights, and those are that bundle, that box of rights, the business interests, the property rights that I was referring to, and the right to receive at least you can sit and establish a quorum. You can vote on other matters that the Gaming Control Board had previously indicated were acceptable, including matters that are on agenda that don't involve changing the board composition. NRS 78.1963, you asked for authority, Your Honor, on how shares have unique property rights beyond value. That provision says you can't cancel the right to vote without putting aside enough to pay for those shares. That right is independent of the value of the shares that was unpaid. And so, Your Honor,
exactly are you asking for in the preliminary injunction? I read your initial motion. There's been a lot of arguments over time about what you are or aren't asking for. What are you actually asking? Like, if we did what you wanted, what would that order look like?
We're asking for this court to correct the legal errors, the most profound being the misapplication of the business judgment rule to extend to corporate liability.
Sorry, I wasn't clear, and I'm sorry about that. So I guess it's not really what we would do. If you got the preliminary injunction you wanted, what would it say? What would it enjoin?
It would enjoin the cancellation of the shares until there was compliance with the articles and the NRS. And there's no question, Your Honor, that those shares would need to be locked up pending licensing or sale. And the VDCTA establishes the framework for how that would be locked up. We asked for a constructive trust so that the shares were protected but not lost, and all those, that bundle of rights was not lost. There are still share rights that could be restored. A constructive trust with the terms of the VDCTA would meet the concerns of both Galaxy and Triangulum.
So they've already been canceled. They're already back. Well, they were now authorized and unissued shares. So they would be what? Would they be reissued to your client? Would they just be precluded from being issued to anyone else? What specifically?
So, Your Honor, that was a factual error in the court's order below where she made the finding that these shares were actively trading, and she didn't want to interfere with the trade. There is zero evidence that these shares were reissued. The shares were canceled, returned to Treasury, and the whole notion of a constructive trust is they can be titled in the name of the custodian here. It can be Galaxy or a custodian acceptable to gaming. And they're in their custody, so they cannot be reissued pending the ability of Triangulum to sell them or to be licensed.
And what injury would that avoid for your client?
The injury that resulted, which is the violation of the articles and the failure to purchase the shares, a requirement of those articles, as well as the rights under NRS Chapter 78. Those injuries remain without that relief entered.
So they should have to pay now instead of waiting 10 years.
Well, that is the requirement under the articles, and it's the requirement under NRS 78.1963, not just to pay, but to purchase to satisfy the obligation of an involuntary sale. The obligation to purchase the shares.
Ms. Turner, if I could ask you a question, please. Assuming that we believe the issue is money damage as opposed to the voting rights issue on the irreparable harm argument, what evidence is there in the record that would justify us reversing the lower court's decision, grant or denying the preliminary injunction in part on the irreparable harm argument? And by that I mean, are there issues and evidence within the record that speak to an inability to collect on the money or anything that would go outside traditional money damages?
Yes, Your Honor. It's undisputed that if the if Galaxy were to pay the obligation under the articles or comply with the obligation to set aside an amount sufficient to redeem the shares, it would render the company balance sheet insolvent, and that is in the record and is undisputed. That is undisputed. And Your Honor, that brings us to this giant elephant of the misapplication of the business judgment rule. The board cannot alter the legal obligations of the corporation. It cannot eliminate obligations under the NRS or under the articles just because they believe it's in the company's best interest. There's an absolute, it's axiomatic. You cannot issue a note and satisfy a purchase obligation. This court said 1932, Schmeling versus Johnston, a note in the absence of agreement to the contrary does not constitute payment of an obligation. It is, the board cannot alter that obligation. And here, the district court said, because the board is making a decision, the corporation has no liability, and we're denied the remedy against the corporation. Here, not only were we denied that remedy, but there was irreparable injury that was suffered and continues to suffer. There was a shareholders meeting in August of 2019. My client had no participation rights under, with the use of these Triangulum shares that were purportedly canceled. Canceled without setting aside an amount sufficient to redeem the shares. Now we have an upcoming shareholders meeting. The injury continues, and the injury will continue forever so long as Galaxy continues to operate. Insolvency is not an excuse to the payment obligation under the articles and under the NRS 78.1963. I'm running out of time, so I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for reply.
Okay, thank you.
Before you do, Justice Kadish, may I ask her a question?
Of course.
So why aren't money damages adequate? Let's credit your position that they should have paid you today and handed the money in exchange for the stock. You're saying they're insolvent, they can't do it, but let's say you prevail on that point. Wouldn't you be able to get money damages equal to whatever you would have recovered had they attempted to do that?
So money damages would resolve the lost value. That would resolve the lost value, and it would resolve the, but it doesn't resolve the other rights that continue on until they pay. So until they pay, and here I submit they cannot, we have that ongoing right even to monetize the shares. That is in the bundle of rights to monetize all those rights that go with personal property. To sit at the shareholders meeting and constitute a quorum, that is a right that is denied today. And until we get paid, those rights continue. And that is what is lost here, is that the articles required payment of an amount certain, that trading value as of that date. Well, if they don't do that, then we get to ride with the company, all the ups, all the downs, and contribute, participate to the extent that the gamers determine appropriate. And that's what's been denied. And that is an independent right to the value that those shares have.
Okay, thanks. We'll reserve the rest of your time. I'll give you one extra minute in rebuttal, and I'll give an extra minute to Mr. Smith. Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Gaming licenses are not only the lifeblood of companies in the industry, they are also a vital safeguard to assure the public that gaming operators have honesty, integrity, and good character. Mr. Saucier and his company Triangulum failed to establish those suitability requirements necessary to be associated with a gaming licensee. They failed and refused to participate in good faith with gaming regulatory investigations, have been found not suitable, and have been otherwise rejected by gaming regulators. That's why after years of trying to navigate their unsuitability quagmire, Galaxy Board of Directors exercised its business judgment and fulfilled its self-policing and expelled Triangulum from the company. That decision to expel Triangulum is protected by the business judgment rule in two ways. First, with regard to the unsuitability determinations under Article 3, Section 6 that I just referenced, but also with regard to the board's determination about the form, term, and method of payment. The district court should be affirmed for three reasons. First is a lack of irreparable harm. As the court has already hit on, we are dealing here with monetary damages whose value is easily calculable on a daily basis. Second, Triangulum failed to establish a likelihood of success on the merits of any of its claims. The district court concluded that Galaxy had made a prima facie showing that the business judgment rule applies and that the redemption was appropriate under the controlling documents. That finding is very important. And that the redemption was appropriate under the controlling document and in the best interest of the company. And third, the appeal should be, the district court should be affirmed because aspects of this interlocutory appeal have been rendered moot by the amended counterclaim and Triangulum's affirmative representations to gaming regulators that it no longer is interested in being involved in the gaming industry. After those representations, the Gaming Commission rejected Triangulum's application after the Gaming Control Board unanimously voted to deny suitability.
Mr. Smith, may I interrupt you for a moment, sir, please?
Yes.
Based on your outline of the arguments as you see them, are you conceding that Judge Alf was in error when she determined that she did not have the ability to restrain anything based upon the, quote, continuing to trade at stock, quote, finding?
No, Your Honor. I think Judge Alf was absolutely correct on that finding for a number of reasons. Triangulum waited over a month until after the redemption had already occurred to even move for a preliminary injunction. At that point, the stock, as Justice Kadish pointed out, had been returned to authorized and unissued, essentially canceled. So for all intents and purposes, that stock no longer exists. The district court had no authority to enjoin a redemption that had already occurred, or any sort of constructive trust or any other requested relief that Triangulum described today would require a mandatory injunction to reissue those shares.
And so, Mr. Smith, sorry, I just want to be clear, and I don't, you know, I think you guys ended up drafting the order for Judge Alf's signature, which it's still her order, I understand. But the stock that was trading during that time that she was referring to, what is your understanding of what she was talking about? In other words, I'm not reading that as her saying that that Galaxy was trading out in the market the stock it took from Triangulum, just that Triangulum, as a publicly traded company, its stock was being bought and sold by private holders in the interim. Is that what you understand?
Yes, Your Honor, but I'll point one thing out. Any sort of restraint on that canceled stock would essentially be an injunction tying the board's hands to determine what, if anything, it chooses to do with that stock. So I agree with Your Honor that what Judge Alf was saying was not speaking specifically to the redeemed or canceled stock, but just saying we are talking about a publicly traded company here whose shares are freely traded on the market every day. And as Your Honor pointed out, there's no case that I'm aware of holding that there's irreparable harm involving shares of a publicly traded company. The cases that Triangulum rely upon have to do with customer goodwill, business reputation, trade secrets. That's the Finkel case, the Sobel case, the Goyon case. Triangulum also points to cases involving real property, like the Crockett foreclosure case, the Pet Cemetery watering case, the Leonard versus Stoeblin case. Unlike stock, real property is unique. It's not freely traded in the market millions of times a day. It has unique properties. There's no case that I'm aware of that Triangulum has cited either involving irreparable harm in publicly traded stock. The closest they come is the Unitrin case, and that case had to do with directors trying to entrench themselves, not the nature of the publicly traded stock itself. And this concept that there's a fear that Triangulum will become insolvent, or excuse me, Galaxy will become insolvent or bankrupt before the note is due, was specifically rejected by the district court. The district court, in the first sentence of paragraph 3 of her order, which the court can see at 1322 of the record, says, there's a no immediate threat that the company will dissolve or shed assets. That was the case a year and a half ago, and it's certainly the case now. The country, the world, the gaming industry has survived a pandemic in the meantime, and Galaxy stock price is higher today than it was at the time of the redemption. And in the middle of the pandemic, in May of 2020, Galaxy tendered the first interest payment under the terms of the note, a substantial payment of $781,000, which Triangulum accepted in cash. So this idea that the note is a sham or that Galaxy has no intention of honoring the note, there was no evidence of that before the district court a year and a half ago, and there's no evidence now. This concept of balance sheet insolvency is also incorrect. Ms. Turner says it's undisputed. That's not accurate. To be balance sheet insolvent, Triangulum ignores an important provision of NRS 78.288. That's subsection 6. Subsection 6 says that indebtedness issued as a distribution will not count as a liability toward the insolvency calculation of paragraph 2 if its terms provide that payment of principal and interest will be made only if and to the extent a distribution could otherwise be made. So if the terms of the note contain that clause, it doesn't count as a liability toward the indebtedness calculation.
And Mr. Smith, let me interrupt you for a moment. If we were to credit, or if ultimately the court is to credit, the position that your articles did not authorize redemption without cash payment in exchange, and in fact no note could be given that's 10 years and they call it a sham, but take the color out of that argument and just say it had to be paid in cash rather than by note, what do you say to her argument that the failure to do that constitutes irreparable injury not compensable by money damages?
So the value of the stock itself is obviously compensable by monetary damages. What Ms. Turner is focusing on are the alleged shareholder rights in the meantime. But that ignores, again, the findings of gaming regulators. The gaming regulators, and we've supplemented the record with some of the...
Wait one second. The irreparable injury on money damages. If she's right that her client was entitled to $39 million cash, and you didn't pay that, how does the money damages and irreparable injury argument fit with that? What is she supposed to do?
If she's right, just like any other breach of contract case, if somebody says they're owed money and it wasn't paid, you proceed on a trial on the merits, and at the end of the day, if you get a judgment, you get a judgment for a monetary amount. It's not a scenario where the stock would be reissued to them without some type of mandatory injunction. So the fact that there is a monetary value available, there's no risk of bankruptcy or dissolution, as the district court found, that demonstrates that there is no irreparable injury if the monetary damages are available. But for the court to even get to the determination that the payment method was inappropriate, there would have to be a rebut the business judgment rule to even get to that determination. The underlying determination of whether the board's decision was reasonable or accurate first requires rebut the business judgment rule. The business judgment rule best boards with discretion to interpret their own articles of incorporation and insulate boards of directors from breach of contract claims based upon articles of incorporation that vest the board with discretion. Here, Galaxy's articles vest the board with complete discretion about how to effectuate the payment. The term purchase is not defined in the agreement, so therefore the board has complete discretion to interpret that in the best interest of its shareholders and the company to effectuate that payment. Galaxy's own cases cited at pages 7 and 8 of the reply brief support that proposition. I'm speaking specifically about the Palm Springs Villas versus Park case. In that case, the court said that as long as the prerequisites for the business judgment rule are established, even a good faith but mistaken interpretation of the company's articles are protected by the business judgment rule. Similarly, another case cited by Triangulum, the California Dairies case, says the same thing. The business judgment rule applies to breach of contract actions involving discretionary actions of the board. Here, the articles do not specify the manner of payment, so the board has complete discretion, as long as it resorts to an informed decision-making process. And the record's undisputed here that Galaxy did resort to an informed decision-making process. The declaration of Mark Lipparelli, who was the former chairman of the Gaming Control Board, whose expertise in matters of gaming cannot reasonably be questioned. He details the whole history of this process, and specifically at page 761 of the record, paragraphs 50 and 51 of the declaration, Mr. Lipparelli describes the process the board went through. It sought, received, and relied upon outside legal counsel about the form and terms of payment. A board is allowed to consult outside legal experts to determine whether any particular action under articles of incorporation are allowed. And as long as they resort to that good faith process, which they did here, that's protected. CFO Mr. Harry Haggerty, as described in paragraph 51, made a presentation to the board about the economic consequences to the company of issuing this note. He explained the promissory note, he explained solvency issues with the company, the company's existing credit facility, the company's financial abilities and obligations. And as long as the company follows that decision-making process, that is protected. What Triangulum is asking this court to do is take a blue pencil to the word purchase and say that purchase means a cash payment. That would be giving them greater rights than they have under the Articles of Incorporation. And that decision would have enormous public policy consequences in the gaming industry. If what Triangulum is saying is this, that a gaming company cannot redeem an unsuitable shareholder if it does not immediately have enough cash on hand to buy them out. What Triangulum is saying is that Nevada law somehow puts gaming companies into a catch-22 or Hobsonian's choice of either maintaining an unsuitable shareholder and risking their gaming license and imperiling the public, or going bankrupt to redeem them automatically. That would put gaming laws and gaming requirements in an irreconcilable conflict with corporate laws. That's not what the law required, and especially not under this specific instance of the Articles of Incorporation. Again, Judge Al.
So by your reckoning, could the board provide that they'll issue a note for, it's a 50-year note with the first payment due in 25 years?
So if the board resorts to an informed decision-making process and sets terms that are not shocking on its face, and I say that by this, a lot of the more extreme hypotheticals we can think of would fall into categories where the business judgment rule would catch them. I use the example of a 200-year note. If a 200-year note was issued, that would perhaps be evidence that the board did not involve itself in a good faith process. But if there's indicia, procedural indicia, like this court said in Wynn versus Okada, that the board resorted to a good faith process, then the business judgment rule would apply. But I'll give an example.
Her client's claim is against the entity. It's against Galaxy. It's not against the directors. The business judgment rule primarily insulates directors from individual liability for acts that they undertake. Your argument that they could issue a 50-year note with no payments for 25 years, the corporation would be getting the stock essentially for nothing.
No, Your Honor. First, in Wynn versus Okada, the court said that the business judgment rule applies to board of directors and not just the actions of individual officers of directors.
So in the context of the attorney-client privilege, correct?
No, Your Honor. I think that was in the broader context of setting out the contours of the business judgment rule, which had to be set before even reaching the discovery issue. So I don't think that was just in the context of the attorney-client privilege. For example, on page 344 of the Okada decision, the court said Wynn Resorts is entitled to the good faith presumption. Not the individual directors, not the board. Wynn Resorts is entitled to the good faith presumption. And there's no legal distinction under corporate law between the board and the company. Companies are creatures of the state and can only act through their officers and directors. Boards make decisions. It would, just as this court indicated in Wynn versus Okada, it wouldn't make sense to be able to go around the business judgment rule by naming the board instead of the individuals. And likewise, wouldn't make any sense here to allow a party to avoid the business judgment rule by naming the corporation. The corporation and the board are legally indistinct, and the court said that in Wynn versus Okada.
Well, so Mr. Smith, so anyone who enters a contract with a corporation does so at their own risk, because if their board reasonably believes that what they're doing doesn't breach the contract, even if it does, there's no remedy? Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor. I'm not arguing that the business judgment rule applies to third-party contracts, for example. I'm not arguing that. My point is that the business judgment rule applies to breach of contract claims touching upon the fundamental corporate documents, articles of incorporation, and breach of contract. If the breach of contract claim has to do with fundamental documents like articles, the Board of Directors is vested with discretion to interpret its own articles under the business judgment rule. The court said that in the Kansas Heart Hospital case, the 2008 case from Kansas, relying on earlier lines of cases, said that the business judgment rule grants boards authority to interpret their own articles. So, for example, and I'll give you an example. Dividends are the classic example of this case, where a company's articles might say the company may issue dividends. A shareholder cannot recast their arguments as a breach of contract if they're not happy with how often the board of directors issues a dividend. The business judgment rule would apply to that. If articles of incorporation vest the board with discretion to act, the business judgment rule applies. It doesn't apply to third-party contracts, but where the articles vest the board with discretion to act, the case law from California, again, I'll point to the Palm Springs Villa case, California Dairies case, those cases say that where fundamental documents vest the board with discretion to act, the business judgment rule applies. And that's precisely the situation we're dealing with here, where the articles of incorporation don't specify how the board is to pay or the terms. In that scenario, as long as the board follows an informed decision-making process, the business judgment rule will insulate that determination.
May I follow up, Chief Justice?
Sure. So go ahead, Justice Herndon.
Mr. Smith, you alluded earlier or started to the motion to supplement, which we granted, as well as the counter motion. How does that transcript from the control board and the commission documents, as well as the Shearer letter, play into what decision we should make today?
Those documents have a crucial impact on the request for a constructive trust, leaving the door open even the slightest bit to the reissuance of shares, which is what the requested relief below was. It's at page 16 of the opening brief here, too. They want the shares reissued. But if you read that transcript, all of the commissioners made clear that Mr. Saucier cannot have any involvement in the gaming industry until he goes back to the Gaming Control Board and Gaming Commission and is found suitable. And so that transcript prevents any sort of request for a constructive trust that would even leave the door open a sliver to him get to Triangulum or Saucier getting the shares back.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Turner, rebuttal.
Number one, on irreparable injury, one critical piece that is being ignored is this 57% control block of Galaxy that represents the sweat of its founder cannot be replaced. Triangulum cannot go out in the public market and repurchase this block. This block has unique value, and under NRS 78.240, Triangulum has a personal property right in not only each share, but that control block that represented 57%. It's an erroneous conclusion to say that there is no value to, and there's no authority for holding that personal property interests lie in the shares of a public company like Galaxy. Number two.
Counsel, wasn't he already divested of control before the redemption by virtue of the proceedings with gaming?
No, not all rights. Some rights were locked up. He could not change the composition of the board, but he had the right to vote for other matters related to.
Wasn't it reduced to like a 40% control rather than 57, something like that?
So custodians acceptable to the Gaming Control Board controlled the other 15%. Yes, that doesn't mean he didn't have the right to possess and participate with respect to those shares. He just wasn't the custodian, and he could not sell them without Nevada Gaming Control Board approval. With respect to the misapplication of the business judgment rule, the statute's clear on its face. It only protects officers and directors from liability. May 22, 2001, the minutes of the Senate, it says explicitly, if there's any question on the intent with respect to the business judgment rule, 78.1383, the business judgment rule does not take away a remedy against the corporation. and the board does not have discretion then to alter or eliminate the corporate obligations. With respect to this argument that there can be discretion when there's silence on the method of payment, again, it's the law of Nevada since the Nevada Supreme Court issued Schmeling versus Johnson.
Ms. Turner,
a note in the absence of an agreement to yes.
I'm sorry, but your time has expired. But let me give you 30 seconds to finish your thought.
Well, that case says a note in the absence of an agreement to the contrary does not constitute a payment of an obligation. You heard counsel concede that if the note were to be given effect and actually constitute payment, it would render the company insolvent. If it was payable in cash, they could not afford it. It would have rendered the company insolvent if they were required to pay. Council completely ignored NRS 78.1963, which is a statute governing the company, and no cancellation of the shares can be made without setting aside a sum sufficient to redeem the shares. That statute is read in conjunction with the articles under application of the applicable law. And finally, Your Honor, all we're asking is that this court, fix the legal errors and send it back down to the district court to conduct further proceedings to enter relief as necessary to restore the status quo. A constructive trust protects against everything that counsel just articulated.